What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
And merrily we go into the 9 o'clock hour. I was talking about doing morning shows most of my career. And look, I'm not complaining. I'm blessed. I love to do this. I have the best job in the world. But I asked people if they got up early, were they always tired? And one text comes in and says, I get up every morning at 2:30 the last 17 years. I just retired last August. I still get up at 2:30 just in time. I just don't have to go to work anymore. Somebody else texted in and said, I get up for work at 3 a.m. and I'm in bed by 7 p.m. I live tired. I heard that, brother. And somebody else said that I change my daily routine and wake up at 4 a.m. and work out every morning for Lent. I haven't looked forward to Easter this much since I gave up alcohol for Lent. It's just not normal. And I'm not complaining. I'm glad. I'm lucky. I'm blessed. But no human being is meant to be up at 3:30 a.m. If you're out, you should be in by that time, and if you're getting up to start the day, it's far too early. But I love what I do, so there you go. Let's talk about the House settlement and what's going on with name, image, and likeness in college football and college athletics. Matt Brown joins us, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter. He's our guy. How you doing, Matt?
Yeah, Tommy, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, and I appreciated that the listening to that in the beginning. I used to have one of those jobs where I got up at 3:34 in the morning, and I don't think I'd go back to that if you doubled my pay. Like,
were you tired?
That was
constantly?
Paleolithic, man.
Were you tired constantly?
Oh, I'm sure. Well, I mean, I'm also tired constantly now, but I think that just comes from getting older and working 60 hours a week and having little kids. But no, when I taught elementary school and would get up at 3:34 to make sure I could get over the get over the Huey in time and get to school. Yeah, by 2 o'clock I was exhausted. I was pounding 3 Celsiuses a day.
How old were you?
I was 22. Yeah. I was still skinny back then. it was just a lot.
I asked a family member a couple of years ago. Was I this tired when I was 20 something years old doing morning shows? And he said, yeah, you were. You were always tired. You were taking a nap. You were always lethargic. So it doesn't matter. The age doesn't matter. It's the hours. But thank you, Matt. Let's talk about the Extra Points newsletter. Then we'll get into the House settlement, and then we'll talk about the latest. Okay, for context.
Sure, absolutely. Friends, I run the Extra Points newsletter and have for the last 5 years. It uses original reporting that's done by me and analysis that covers the off-the-field stories that shape the college athletics industry, from the largest SEC programs to the smallest Division III programs, everything from what's happening in Washington, D.C. and in courtrooms to what's happening with television rights and how schools earn and spend money and all of the things that shape what happens on the field on Saturdays and on the courts in the spring.
Since you mentioned Washington, let's start with tariffs because, I don't know what time it is, what minute it is. I don't have the TV on. I don't know what's happened lately with tariffs. I think the question, and I don't mean to bring you into this morass, but I will say it.
Yeah.
I think the question, the ultimate question is the president crazy or crazy like a fox? And I guess we'll find out. What effect will tariffs have on college athletics or college sports?
Yeah, and it's interesting because you wouldn't typically think of college athletics as an industry that would be deeply exposed to tariffs, because the games all happen here, the schools are all here, the live events and the television companies that broadcast them are all here. But I think one thing that a lot of folks are learning over the last week and a half is that almost every facet of our consumer lives and almost every industry really is interconnected globally. If we look at the major athletic programs just in the state of Louisiana, all of them are partnered with athletic apparel and equipment companies that do the vast majority of their manufacturing in Asia. Not just in China, a lot in Vietnam, some in Bangladesh, some in Japan, but that's every basketball shoe, that's all of the hoodies and sweatshirts and performance apparel. It's a lot of the baseball equipment. Really, I was digging into this other than like football helmets, and a lot of the manufacturing and maintenance around basketball courts. Most stuff in a weight room and on an athlete comes from Asia. And then a lot of the materials that we use to build stadiums, to refurbish locker rooms, to handle campus construction, a lot of that, those raw materials come from Canada, they come from Mexico, and they come from Asia too. So if we're looking at a world where you're right, we don't really know what the rules are because they change every 8 hours, and maybe it's 10%, maybe it's 130%. You know, I haven't checked the news yet either. Mm-hmm. But those kinds of increases will be passed on not just to consumers, but to corporations that purchase large amounts of those materials, and that will include entities like Tulane and LSU. And whether that money either has to get passed on to consumers in the form of higher ticket prices, or it's going to get passed on to lower services or cuts elsewhere in those athletic departments.
I don't mean to go here, but since you mentioned it, I was talking to a high school football coach not too long ago, and he told me, and I'm not going to mention any names, that the principal didn't want him to cut anybody from the football team because they want every student that is on the football team continues to pay tuition, and they were afraid that if they cut somebody, then maybe they'd go to another school and they'd lose that tuition, and that's an empty seat, because ultimately, let's face it, a school is a business. One way or the other, you got to put butts in the seats, right, to cover your bills.
Unquestionably.
And you mentioned the cost of football helmets and everything else. I don't think people realize, since you brought it up, how much a football helmet costs and how much it takes to protect athletes, insurance, and everything else.
It's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And for one, I think what you're actually describing there at maybe the private high school level is a really important principle, because this is the single biggest reason why so many smaller universities, whether you're a small D1 school like a University of New Orleans or a McNeese potentially, and certainly institutions at Division II and Division III, they're not using their athletic departments to make money from selling tickets and television rights. They're using their athletic departments to earn tuition revenue, because they'll have big old rosters, and they'll expand to have lots of sports, and that's why anybody has a stunt program or a beach volleyball program. It's for tuition revenue, and you know, some of the other things I think we'll talk about in this segment potentially impact that. Even for a small institution that's getting a 60% off discount from Adidas to go buy a bunch of their stuff, over the course of a fiscal year, it's easily over $500,000 just for shoes and clothes and batting helmets and swimsuits. When you add in the health insurance, when you add in the concussion protocol and having to have trainers, which are very difficult people to hire anywhere in the country, forget paying your football coach $3 million. Forget some of the fancy stuff. Yeah, you're looking at bare minimum $5-7 million to run an athletic department, even a very small one. And tariffs, as well as many, many other things, can significantly impact those costs.
What about, since we're talking about Washington, D.C., international players, Marco Rubio saying that the United States is revoking all visas held by South Sudanese passport holders, including the African nation's government of taking advantage of the United States, accusing rather the government of taking advantage of the U.S. A basketball star on the Duke team is among those that could be deported due to the new policy. Is that something that's on the radar of coaches and college teams?
If it wasn't on the radar for coaches a week and a half ago. It certainly is now. And this is something I'm in the process of doing some more reporting on, and hopefully we'll have something early next week. But what I can tell you is that the percentage of athletes that are typically international students varies pretty significantly by sport, right? There's not a whole lot of folks from South Sudan who are playing high-level college football right now. To the extent that they're not American, they tend to be either punters or special teams athletes mm-hmm. from Australia mm-hmm. or some folks from Canada. But for other sports, and like not just soccer, but for swimming and for tennis and golf, you might have an international athlete population of 40 or 50 or even higher percent, like particularly for tennis. Mm-hmm. The majority of those athletes tend to come from Western Europe or from higher income families in many Asian countries like South Korea. And then you have some from South America. But this is a risk. I mean, even well before Senator Rubio was confirmed as Secretary of State in the very beginning of this transition, I remember talking to some coaches at Hawaii who were terrified. Because one of the, you know, Hawaii's major recruitment strategies for all their whole athletic department is Australia and New Zealand and Japan, because they're only a 5-hour flight from those places compared to, you know, 15 hours for maybe some other parts of the, you know, of the country. And they were already worried that they might lose some of their coaches or 40-50% of some of their rosters. It is a major issue. It's probably not something that's going to keep Brian Kelly up at night. But there are going to be some college tennis and golf coaches who are going to be very concerned, even if they're not recruiting athletes from Jordan or from South Sudan or from you know, international hotspots, because some of those parents are going to say, yeah, sure, Spain's fine now, but how can I be sure that they're going to be fine in 6 months?
And that's the other question about recruiting where – and going back to the whole question about bringing manufacturing here, and I'm not asking you about that, but – you know, yeah. It's like, how do you plan when you don't know what the future is going to be? And I would think when it comes to recruiting, what would a college coach do? Not look to those countries?
It would be hard. And I think maybe a good way to think about it for maybe folks listening here is it's not so much that a rule is bad or not, but it's the not knowing. If you were trying to plan your commuting route and the toll road on some of the bridges around here changed every 2 or 3 days, and sometimes you had to drive on the left lane or sometimes the right lane going over the bridges, or sometimes there would be lots of traffic enforcement and some none at all, trying to figure out when to leave for work or how to plan everything would be really difficult. It's going to be $6 to cross one bridge, it sucks, but at least there's some stability there. That is not the case right now in college sports on almost every level, and that's true for international recruiting. And you're right, some people will just decide it's not worth the instability. I'm not gonna look in those places anymore. And it's true for a lot of regulations on athlete compensation, or what the rules are for NIL and how you might be able to get in trouble or how any of that works. It's not so much that the rules are bad. It's that nobody really has any sense of finality or security about what they're going to be in 3 or 6 months. That's very difficult.
I'll tell you this. I'm not in that business, Matt Brown, but I'm glad I do have this job. And even though I have to get up at 3 a.m. to bring it full circle back to where we started, I'd much rather do that than be involved in this mess. We'll pick it up. We come back about name, image, and likeness, house settlement, and more. Talking to Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter, 921, Tommy Tucker, back in a flash, WWL. 9:28 now. Federal court hearing on Monday lasted 7 hours. Now, I just want you to think about that. That would be from now until what, 4:30 in the afternoon, I guess? Testimony from athletes and lawyers and objections, I'm sure, and this and that and the other thing about the settlement for past, present, and future Division I athletes. That's who the attorneys were representing, I guess. The judge says, I think it's a good settlement, but don't.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Quote me that there are a lot of things left to be answered. Olivia Dunn came out and said that she didn't like the settlement, didn't think it was fair. Matt Brown published the Extra Points newsletter. For context, tell us quickly how all of this started and where we are and what happens from here.
Yeah, sure. This has been a conversation that's been happening for more than the last year and a half, combining multiple antitrust lawsuits against the NCAA and power conferences. The antitrust lawsuits primarily concern prior athletes who did not get a chance to take advantage of NIL rights, whether that was from brands or from EA Sports video games or other opportunities, recruiting and NIL restrictions are an unfair restraint of trade. NCAA and the big conferences did not want to go to trial over this because if they went and they lost, and they would probably lose, they would face treble damages and literally bankrupt the NCAA. The liabilities would extend well into the billions of dollars. And so the two sides have come together and hashed out a settlement to these cases, right? You'll see this in the news called the House settlement. The last hearing for that settlement to see if it would be approved was earlier this week. You're right, it did take 7 hours, And the industry expectation, if you talk to Greg Sankey, you talk to an athletic director, big school, small school, anywhere, the industry expectation for the last 2.5 months is that this settlement would eventually be approved. Probably wouldn't happen on April 7th. They were going to expect some final tweaks, and it looked like those are probably going to happen with walk-on limits. But that then the settlement will ultimately likely be approved, which would mean that starting in July, schools can then begin to directly pay athletes rather than having to rely on third-party collectives or outside groups, and that there will be new limits and new rules on how athletes are paid and how large the size of rosters and scholarships can be for those college athletes.
This will be a settlement, not a judgment, so there will be no appeal, or am I wrong?
Well, as I understand it, once this thing is approved, there will almost certainly be immediate lawsuits challenging
well,
it.
There you go.
From Title IX grounds, which are not part of this particular evaluation, from athletes that opted out and wanted to sue the NCAA on other grounds. But while those appeals and additional lawsuits are happening, the settlement will continue. So even if people are suing to complain about this, athletes are going to get paid starting this summer.
How do you go about determining back pay and for whom?
It's a really good question, and the exact math has not been shared with plebeian reporters like me or with a lot of other people. It's a bunch of other economists and lawyers got in a room and tried to make some calculations based on games played or snaps or social media followings. And it's heavily based on sport formulas. So the vast majority of this back pay is going to go to football and men's basketball players rather than swimmers or track athletes who probably would not have been able to get very much name, image, or likeness money anyway compared to somebody who might have been the runner-up for a Heisman Trophy. To me, I think the most relevant information here for fans of college athletics is not so much the back pay or the back penalties, where a few athletes are going to get really significant money. But what it means for college sports moving forward, with now every athletic department essentially having a salary cap to spread out among different sports to pay people directly.
Athletic departments, so what happens to the golf team? What happens to the, I'm trying to think of the lacrosse team? Are there...
Yeah.
Does it go back to what we talked to earlier about, yeah, come here, play lacrosse if you pay tuition? Does it go to, we're not going to pay anybody to play golf or lacrosse? Instead, we'll give the money to the football program? I'm just wondering what the results will be or if we can anticipate that.
We can, and it's a great question. And I think one of the really interesting things is that every institution can decide how they want to split up that money themselves. There is a kind of rough back of the napkin math that I would say is most common, where many schools are saying we're going to distribute roughly 75% of our cap to football, roughly 15% to men's basketball, roughly 5% to women's basketball, and 5% to everything else. But there's going to be some pretty significant variances depending on the institution. And I'll give an example. Like, I'm based in Chicago. I'm up here in Big Ten country. And one sport that's very, very important to many Big Ten schools that is not really a thing here in the Southeast is men's wrestling. Mm-hmm. At Iowa and Penn State, these programs are profitable. They are on both linear television and pay-per-view, and thousands of people go. And Iowa and Penn State, and to some extent Ohio State and a few other programs, are absolutely going to have to allocate hundreds of thousands of dollars to support their men's wrestling programs. There's a few wrestling programs in the South that are going to allocate some of that money. That's not a thing Alabama is going to be doing. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some programs, I think, in the SEC that are going to say, we need to make sure we allocate money for women's gymnastics. That's a big deal here. We sell lots of tickets. We send people to the Olympics. We want to be competitive. We want to have the next SUNY Lee here. That's important for our department. So we have to allocate some of that money. There's going to be some schools that don't have football that are going to say, we're going to really go all in on basketball. And you might even have some programs that might shock people. They're going to have bigger salary cap or operating budgets for basketball than some Big Ten or SEC schools. I don't think there's a right answer. It depends a lot on how much you trust your ability to give money to the right athletes, and also what's important to your fan base and where do you have the best chance of winning a championship.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back 9:35, 25 till 10. I want to go down a little bit from there and how that affects the Olympic teams, how it affects high school sports, because I was saying the other day, Matt, I go to the driving range occasionally, and I got a lot of parents out there with kids that they are hoping for a college scholarship, and I was having a conversation with somebody. If they have the skills, you may be able to develop them, but to think you're going to give your kid the skills that you need to be a professional golfer just by going to the driving range, I don't think is realistic. So we'll talk about, you know, and you understand what I'm saying, and people
do
that. And it's like you or I'm guessing you or I, no matter what kind of training we had, no matter what practice we had, we could never be professional golfers. We could never be professional athletes, and not everybody can. But I think some people think that. We'll talk about the effect down the line of this settlement and more. 9:36, 24 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. 9:42, 18 till 10, interesting hour with Matt Brown, our friend, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter, about the House settlement that is not about the House of Representatives. It's about a swimmer, and it concerns name, image, and likeness, and colleges directly paying athletes. And before we get to, you know, every action having a reaction, how does this factor in with name, image, and likeness? The college will pay the player, but they can still have name, image, and likeness money?
Yeah, the way it will work is the university will send an athlete a contract and say, I am going to pay you $110,000 a year for you to while you're participating in these athletic programs for the school to buy your NIL rights. So we will get to use you on billboards or on promotional materials throughout the university or commercials. But you can also continue to do deals independently of this if they're based on fair market value, which is going to be determined not by the NCAA, but by Deloitte, a massive accounting and consulting company that's been retained by these four major institutions. So if you are somebody like Libby Dunn, who has an enormous social media following and has done deals with energy drink companies and has equity in other firms and gets paid a lot of money for that, you can continue to do that. There's nothing stopping any Louisiana athlete from doing an ad for a seafood restaurant, just like we heard a minute or two ago. But they will also be paid some amount of money from the institution itself, in addition to their scholarship and cost of attendance and insurance.
How about transfer portal? Because it would seem to me, if you sign a contract with me, well, then I got you locked up through your college career. But that's not the way it's going to work, right?
Well, it's an interesting thing, right? Because if you're making a six- or seven-figure bet on an 18-, 19-, 20-, 21-year-old, I think you and I both know from knowing people that are that age that's not the most predictable group of people in the world.
I would think that's
accurate. You lock somebody up for 4 years at that particular salary and they get hurt or they are turned out to just not be that good or something else happens, now you've got dead cat money.
The other side of it is you could pay this guy for 1 year, and then it's like free agency in the NFL or whatever sport. Then all of a sudden he squirts you and he jumps over to – he goes from LSU just picking teams to Alabama for more money, and he's playing against you next year.
That's exactly right. And so that's part of the calculus that will be negotiated between player, agent, and school. I imagine if you're a school like, again, you know, just picking a random one here, if you're like CELA, right, if you're Southeastern Louisiana or you're one of these kind of Southlands programs, you would probably want to lock people up as long as you can, but you're not going to be able to. And part of the recruiting pitch is come here, start, do well for 2 years, we'll get you exposure, and then if LSU comes calling, you know, God bless, I'm not going to tell you not to take $1 million. The big schools are going to have to figure out who do I want to make a long-term commitment to up front versus who do we want to renegotiate with. I have seen some of these contracts from a couple of schools through open records and through agents sharing them with me. Many of them do have provisions that say, like, okay, you know, you'll get paid this amount every other month, but if you transfer or if you leave this zip code, then this deal is null and void. As a way of trying to encourage to keep people. But that's going to be one of the challenges.
So, seriously, will a Northeastern, I'm picking schools, Northwestern State, will a Southeastern, a McNeese, really have a $20.5 million salary cap? Will they have the money for that or not?
Not a chance. and I'm not saying this to be disrespectful to our brothers and sisters in the Southland Conference, right? But like, I've got your budget on my computer.
Or UNO even.
You don't make $20 million, so you can't share $20 million if that's not in your bank account. You're going to have some schools that are going to say, we're not going to share anything. Or we're going to wait a year before we share anything. We're going to give you your cost of attendance money and your scholarship and your Alston Award. And depending on how taxes break, that actually might be in your advantage. Mm-hmm. What's more likely for these smaller, low major institutions is that they're going to have a budget of between $2 and $4 million. And then they're going to have to decide how much of that do I want to put on football, basketball, or and maybe for some of the smaller schools locally here, baseball. I think this market understands there are some Southland schools that can absolutely beat LSU on a Wednesday, mm-hmm. and make win a couple of games in the postseason. $800,000 goes a little bit further on a college baseball team than it might on a college basketball team. It's a tricky calculation to make.
So the smaller schools, in essence, become the minor leagues to develop players for the professional major leagues, which is now the bigger colleges.
I think in many ways that is true, and also in many ways that has been true for the last couple of years, right? If you looked at the rosters of the teams in the Final Four and the Elite Eight of the last men's basketball tournament, you saw a lot of guys who started their career at North Florida or at low majors or at OVC kind of teams. They weren't all 4- and 5-star guys that were signed out of high school. It's less the case in football, but there is some upward mobility. And if you're somebody who's a sophomore and you make all Sun Belt, there's a pretty good chance the SEC and the ACC is going to come calling the next year. I understand why fans of some of those other programs are upset about that, but the winds blow both ways. And there's going to be a lot of kids who are fourth string at LSU who then start thinking, you know what? Mm-hmm. Tulane doesn't sound so bad. And maybe somebody who wouldn't have picked up the phone at 17 will be way more interested in heading uptown at 20.
And that brings you to problems with maybe depth at the larger schools, right?
Unquestionably, particularly for college football right now, if you're going to make the national championship game, you're essentially playing an NFL-length season. And this was actually something that I heard from Ryan Day and a couple of Ohio State coaches after the championship game, that they changed the way that they called games, where they played a deliberately slower tempo, where they would have fewer offensive snaps. And maybe that frustrated Buckeye fans are like, why are we only beating Akron by 28? Like, why are we not running up stats to make the Heisman? But the hope is, hey, if we shave off 12 plays here, 12 plays there, our guys are going to be more fresh when it's time to play Texas and Notre Dame in January.
And as you say think of an unintended consequence of betting lines. Right? As prolific as betting has become. Let me get this text real quick. Is there a problem with college agents, like different agents claiming they all represent the same athlete? Pardon me, are there any regulations on who can be an agent or qualifications they have to have?
This is a very important question, and it is one of the single biggest differences between the NFL and NBA and college sports right now. The short answer is, my friends, there are virtually no regulations on who can be a college agent.
So I could call myself an agent tomorrow, right?
You absolutely could. You just change your Twitter profile, update your LinkedIn bio, and you start going. If you want to represent a player on the Saints, you need to be certified by the NFLPA. And that usually means you have to have a graduate degree or a law degree. You have to pass an ethics exam. You have to have years of experience, and basically the union wants to make sure that you're not some complete unethical or unqualified person. We don't have that at the college level. Every state has different licensing or certification rules for sports agents, but none of them are enforced on any meaningful level. And so what you're describing of agents in college saying that they represent guys that they don't, people who are flagrantly breaking NCAA and sometimes state and federal law, people who are charging exorbitant fees, all of that happens. If you want to say in any area here is the Wild West, which is a term that I really don't like, that is true in the agency world. There are some people that I think are not on the short list of going to heaven working in that space.
Lord knows. I want to get to this real quick, and that's unintended consequences of looking down the line with kids in college sports or even high school sports, and how that could affect young people, the schools, sports, et cetera. Your thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, one of the, I think, really beautiful things about college athletics legitimately in this country is that it is one of the single biggest scholarship programs. And I think, you know, of abilities to create class mobility and generational wealth in this entire country. Like, other than the GI Bill, there isn't a single, to the best of my knowledge, there's not a scholarship program in this country larger than college sports. And that means that there's going to be thousands of people who might not be going to college otherwise that have it through this program, whether that's football or whether that's field hockey. And when we have changes in this financial system that further incentivize schools to move resources to consolidate in football and men's and women's basketball. And I'm not saying that that's unethical or wrong. I understand those choices. In many ways, I think that's the right thing to do. But that will mean that there will be scholarship resources taken away from some of those other sports.
Also,
that will hurt over. Yeah, that will hurt us in the Olympics, and it could hurt people's college opportunities.
And I think another thing is there are a lot of lessons to be learned in sports just from playing the sport itself, not compensation or scholarships. And I just wonder if that makes sports disappear, and as a result, then those lessons aren't learned.
I think there really is some risk of that. I think that's especially a concern of mine at the high school and youth levels, whether those opportunities disappear. Where I live in Chicago, my daughters go to Chicago Public Schools. I'm in the northwest side of the city. A lot of our schools don't have sports. My oldest is in fifth grade. There's no sports offered at her school. You have to wait until they get into sixth for some of those things, and part of that is because of money. And there are travel groups or there's third-party groups, but they're exorbitantly expensive. Yep. I think your earlier point, right, you talk to families, there's probably people in this market where their goal is to get their kid a golf or a tennis scholarship or a baseball scholarship. And we know that those private lessons and those AAU groups and those extra training opportunities cost a lot of money,
yep.
Right? If you're going to a recovery school district, your program somewhere, and you're not pulling in 90 grand, you might not have some of those opportunities. And to me, as a former educator and someone that cares big picture about that stuff, I do worry about losing those lessons. There's many places. Yeah.
Got to go. Excellent hour as always. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you again soon. Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Point newsletter, 954. We'll talk to Newell when we come back, see what he's got for you today here on WWL.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand. Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.